Hail cheaters, and welcome to the Always Cheating Fantasy Premier League podcast. My name is Josh. I'm here with Brandon. Brandon, how are you?
I'm great. We roll on with the FPL preview content 2019-20, part three of our team preview series, I guess we can call it. We have a total grab bag of teams. We're going alphabetical order, so you can go back to our somewhat evergreen episodes, parts one and two, where it's Arsenal all the way through Newcastle. Today we're covering Norwich, Sheffield United, Southampton, Spurs, Watford, Wolves, and West Ham. Not necessarily in that order, Josh.
Not necessarily in that order. It's a little mixed up at the end there. It's a motley crew, but that motley crew is, in my opinion, where a fantasy league, a mini league, can be won or lost. You know, it's the 4 million Aaron Wan-Bissakas. Even if you're kind of an amateur player, you're going to find that player out. You know, the 11-12 million forwards and expensive midfielders. You know, those are pretty obvious too. It's pretty clear when someone like Mo Salah is in form. But it's getting on Gerald Deulofeu. You know, getting on these mid table teams and they're finding their talent. It can be really tricky. It's a lot of gambling involved. You know, you look at a team like West Ham. They've got four or five different midfielders who could be interesting. You know, someone like Antonio, you know, was fantastic at the end of last season. You know, very under the radar. Yeah, he actually would have been a great game week 38 option. I'm still kind of kicking myself for not considering him. So you have
always living in the past, Josh.
Yeah, I know. I am. So you have players like Antonio, players like Jerry D, and they're not on the flashy
Nathan Redmond,
teams necessarily.
Maybe?
I'm his number one hater, but yeah, he definitely can't. 6.5 million this year. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
That's too much.
No, you're exactly right. So we're basically digging for diamonds in the rough here. Apart from Spurs, which of course have some of those more premium assets. And I look forward to a Harry Kane discussion with you, which we spent a fair amount of time discussing Harry Kane in our 10 questions previewing the season podcast. But here he'll come up in the entire context of Spurs. Should we do some quick housekeeping before we get into those team previews?
Sure, let's do it. Quick update. We mentioned this in previous podcasts. We won't go into it at any real length, but if you enjoyed the podcast, if you want a bonus podcast per week, if you want to join the Slack, if you want to take advantage of a free t-shirt and lots of other offers that we have at various Patreon levels, and if you do just want to support the cheaters, the cheaters are me and Brandon, no producer. We produce the podcast ourselves. If you want to support the cheaters, then go to patreon.com/alwayscheating. And every little bit helps and is very sincerely appreciated. And we will shout you out on the podcast to say thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Go to patreon.com/alwayscheating and find the right tier for you. And we'll just say right now, quick thank yous to our new Patreon supporters.
A big thank you to our newest producer patron, Dave Wegner-Lodal. Thank you to our new Sam Volkswagen patrons, Goran Henriksen, Matt Marks, Daniel Bloodworth, and Leo Howell. Also, thank you to our new Lord Soloth patrons, Paul Parson, John Cox, Thomas Jacks, Evan Caruso, Polka Dots, Richard Saunders Irving. And finally, thank you to our new Pookie patrons, Jason Conway, Johannes, John Q, Chris DeCarey, and Tim Love. Thank you to all of you very much.
Last bit here, Josh, remember to join our big Always Cheating Super League open to all of our listeners. Come one, come all. The code to join the Always Cheating Super League is DTZ277. You can find that code on our website, alwayscheating.com, or on all of our social handles. So yeah, today, waste no time. Join the Always Cheating Super League. It's huge. It's fun. It's competitive. And Josh, I just want to tell you, I love the Super League.
Brilliant. All right. Brandon, that was so efficient of us that I don't even think we need to take a break. Let's just go right into our first team. Brandon, it's a promoted team. It's Norwich City. Take it away.
The promoted teams, they're tricky to preview, right? Because if we're talking about, like, we're going to talk about Southampton shortly. A kind of tricky FPL team to preview in many ways, but we know like at least 85% of the moving pieces there. Some of these promoted teams, if you're not following the championship, you know virtually nothing. So with Norwich, the problem is they're kind of a vast stay away from team to start the season. They open up away at Anfield. They have Chelsea in game week 3, then Manchester City in game week 5. I would not dare encourage anyone to invest immediately in Norwich City, but I just want to give us all the lay of the land of this team. And
totally. They're a first wild card team, right? When you play that first wild card, that's a team you're going to want to look at.
Yeah, and I think to know Norwich, let's just get to know their manager real quick, German Daniel Farke. That sounds like a made-up name to me, but it's not. Daniel Farke. And he's known for playing an attacking, possession-based style of football, which, as we know, always goes terribly for promoted teams. Flash forward 15 game weeks, and Norwich will be known for playing 5 flat at the back and defending for their lives. mm-hmm. But
Paul
I hope
Lambert
not.
Comes
I,
back. Yep.
I mean, obviously, Norwich finished first, won the championship outright last season, scored a ton of goals, and also conceded a ton of goals. I hope they can bring that attacking football to the Premier League because it sounds like a lot of fun to watch. For FPL, it's good to note that Farke is not known for rotating his squad very much, if at all. So that's a good thing for us as far as Norwich is concerned.
Very good.
So we'll see the players that we like after the first few game weeks, and it should be pretty set in stone from that point forward. And the other thing I just have to flag, and I know you're a fan of this character in the IT mm-hmm. crowd, Josh. Daniel Farke bears a striking resemblance to Matt Berry, who's the comedic actor who plays the weird younger boss who comes in the later seasons of the IT crowd. You remember his iconic mm-hmm. line at his father's funeral?
Mm-hmm. Was it, Papa!
Father!
A father! Right, of course.
So there you are. That's the download on Daniel Farke. Let's get into the actual players that we can bring into our FPL squad. Starting at the defense, so when we previewed Aston Villa, I mentioned that Villa conceded a whopping 61 goals in the championship, which was the worst tally in the top half of the championship table. For perspective, Josh, Norwich conceded 57 goals and they won the league. So basically, maybe I was a little harsh on Villa. Everyone in the championship is conceding goals.
Wait till we get to Sheffield United, Brandon. I may turn your head a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that's where we'll go to actually get our bench defenders from Sheffield United. But just quick to note for future reference, if we're looking at fullbacks for any kind of defenders at Norwich, it's down to Max Ahrens and Jamal Lewis. They're two Trent Alexander-esque, very, very young fullbacks. Max Ahrens is 19, Jamal Lewis is 20. Ahrens is the one to flag here. If you look back at last season, Ahrens beat Jamal Lewis on every single stat save crossing, which you could argue is kind of important for a fullback. But 2 goals and 6 assists for Max Ahrens on the season, and he would be the one to flag for future reference when we may look at Norwich defenders. On the goalkeeper front, longtime FPL players will be excited to see Tim Krul coming back, but it looks like mm-hmm. new GK signing Rolf Farman from Schalke is probably going to give Tim Krul a run for his money, and maybe he will immediately have that number one spot. Remains to be seen there. But
Daniel Farke's man is Rolf Farman. It just makes sense, doesn't it?
Farke and Farman. It sounds like a German, like a Black Forest crime drama. Okay, so let's move to the midfield. Some attacking assets here. Certainly, if Norwich do stick to that attacking ethos, we will just be looking at attacking players. Their midfielders, the really interesting ones, feel kind of expensive to me. Mario Vrančić, he is the midfielder of choice. 10 goals, 7 assists last season, and he's Norwich's penalty taker. But the problem is he costs 6.5 million. That's a hefty chunk of change to risk.
It's too much. Yes, yeah, right. It's too much for now. Yeah. I mean, you know, you just don't know. And like, you know, we have to, when we do these previews, we have to focus on the first 6-8 weeks of the season, you know, because otherwise it's just, you're just looking too far ahead. You know, you're looking in that first wildcard territory, as I mentioned before. And so I think it's 6.5 million. Maybe he's a good value, but right now it's hard to say that.
Yeah. There's Buendia, who a lot of people are flagging as the creative heartbeat of the Norwich midfield. I mentioned to you these two big Norwich fans that I met at the Black Horse who were actually just in New York for a weekend from England. They're like proper Norwich fans. And they said, look out for Buendia in the Premier League next season. 8 goals, 12 assists, and he's on most of Norwich's set pieces. The bargain pick, I think, in the midfield could turn out to be Onel Hernandez at 5.5. Scores 8 goals, 9 assists last season, and he's just in the mix. And 5.5 seems like as much as one would be willing to pay for a promoted team, just in our way of thinking ahead of game week one. So I'm flagging Onel Hernandez as okay. The bargain FPL pick. But who do we really want to talk about, Josh? If I said we're going to preview Norwich City, who's the man?
The new always cheating namesake, Brennan. It must be. It has to be. It simply can only be Timu Pukki. Pukki.
I like that. Timu Pu. Timu Pukki. Yeah, he is the new always cheating patron saint. We love him so much, having not even seen him play in the Premier League, that we named a Patreon tier after him. But Timu Pukki comes into the game priced at 6.5. FPL is backing him to do something. He's 29 years old. He's Finnish, in case you've never heard of this guy. He won the Golden Boot, I guess you would say, in the championship last season. Finished on 29 goals. Not a single one of those 29 goals, Josh, was from a penalty, which is, you know, Mo Salah, eat your heart out. And the next closest scorer was Tammy Abraham at Villa with 26 goals. Pukki also finished the season on 9 assists. This guy just has a great pedigree. He is clicked into this Norwich side. He has to be the one to watch. I know if we're looking at other forwards in this space competing at 6.5, big names like Gerard De La Feu, who you mentioned when we opened the pod, Josh, or Diego Jota.
Yeah.
These are proven assets in the Premier League. So Pukki has his work cut out for him. He's really going to have to mm-hmm. show us that he can score in the Premier League. But if he can, he could. It seems foolish to say he could be like a Raul Jimenez this season. But I don't know.
Well, who knows? You know, yeah, he's a veteran player too. You know, I mean, he just scored a boatload of goals last year. And I mean, that level of goal scoring, I think, is something that will, I mean, it won't translate to the same level, but we're not talking about like some 15 goal striker here. You know, I mean, you know, 29 goals is, mm-hmm. You know, especially in a very physical conference of the championship, you know, so he's going to have mm-hmm. some preparation for this level. And I mean, I think what's really appealing is just that Liverpool, Chelsea, and Man City are done after game week 5, you know?
Yes,
and so,
right. So
after that, I mean, you know, you just don't really, you're not going to have any run of seriously difficult fixtures for a good long time. You know, I mean, right. You might have some tricky fixtures, but nothing that'll make them unplayable, you know? And so it's kind of nice in a way just to like kind of get those tough ones out of the way. And then we can really, mm-hmm. you know, think about Norwich more seriously. Yeah. I'm glad they're back up though. I mean, I like, it's kind of fun to have a club in the East, I think, you know, just like the geographic yeah. part of it's kind of cool. And, I always felt like they had good fans. I like their kits are unique. You know, there's really no other kind of green and gold kits in that style, you yeah. know, so.
Shout out to Stephen yeah. Fry, noted Norwich fan.
That's true. All right, should we move on to Sheffield United?
Yeah, that's it on Norwich. So what do you have to tell us about the other promoted team that we haven't talked about, Sheffield United?
Yeah, well, in some ways, they're less exciting, I think, as a fantasy. Well, there are things to like about them. So I think the real strength here is going to be in their defense. I think that's where the value is going to be found. They play in this 3-5-2 kind of system, or maybe it's a 3-4-1-2. I've seen it written up different ways. But what's unique about it is they have a 3-man back line, kind of like, you know, like Wolves play. But mm-hmm. he gives his two of his center backs permission to bomb forward and join the attack. So it's kind of like the way Duffy does, you know, sometimes for Brighton. Mm-hmm. You'll have these center backs who are going to be part of the attack. So
yeah, I feel like we see Harry Maguire do that from time to time as well. Like, I love watching just a lumbering center back that with those long strides, but still able to control the ball.
Yeah. I mean, who doesn't, you know, it's so they have, Chris Basham and Jack O'Connell are the two 4.5 million center backs who are allowed freedom to bomb forward and join the attack. They did sign Phil Jagielka, which is kind of interesting. I imagine he would be the, like, hang back presence or something. I mean, he's probably there for defensive cover, right? I don't really know. I mean, Jagielka can't, like, he can't play, like, box to box, right? So yeah. I'm not sure. Like, so I assume he would be the stand back player in that team.
He may also be just a guy to provide moral support in the locker room. Leadership, Josh.
Yeah, like another coach or something. Yeah, exactly. They did tie for the best defensive record in the division last year with only 41 goals in 46 matches. Their keeper last season was Dean Henderson, who was on loan from Manchester United. There was a lot of talk. It has not been official as of us recording this podcast, but it looks like he is going to sign another loan deal. And in fact, in the spring of last year, Ole Gunnar was basically like, yeah, it'd be good for him to, you know, have a year of season in the Premier League anyway. So he didn't travel with Man United this summer. I think it's very likely that Dean Henderson becomes the keeper for that team. And as long as he comes in at 4.5 million, I think he is a fantastic option. Great. If you're going to do the 4.5 million keeper rotation thing, then I think he might be a real ideal candidate for it.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's someone to think about. We also have left wing back Enda Stevens, who is the classic player who was slightly too good in the championship and comes in at 5 million instead of 4.5, you know, the classic, yeah. The hard classic pass. Trap. Yeah, I know.
Can and you he, believe he four, thinking yeah. about that? Just real quick. Can you believe that Matt Doherty started last season at 4.5 and now he's 6 million? Yeah. Like, you could say the same about AWB moving from 4 to 5.5 at United, but what we got out of Matt Doherty for 4.5, and now they're selling at Sheffield United priced at 5 million, and it feels out of whack to me.
Yeah, and wasn't there somebody, when Johnny came in, he replaced somebody who went, like, back down to the championship or something, and that guy was priced at 5 million, I remember. He was, like, an even bigger goal scorer than, I can't remember what his name is anymore, but I'm sure some Wolves fan out there knows it. So that's the defense. A lot of interesting options there. I think those cheap center backs who come forward, though, are both really interesting, I guess. I don't know enough between Basham and O'Connell. It's sort of like, I feel like when I don't know, I sometimes just go with who has the lower ownership, you know, just to make it, like, even more of a differential. As far as the attack goes, they are led by two 30-plus-year-old strikers. We have our boy Sharp, who I've talked about many times in this podcast already. And you have David McColdrick, who is kind of the second striker. He starts at 5.5 million. He had 15 goals and 4 assists last season, so not bad. He actually won the team's Player of the Year award, too. But he is very much sort of second on the pecking order to Billy Sharp in that team. Sharp is the one that I would be looking at much more seriously. Billy Sharp had 34 starts last year. He had 23 goals in those 34 starts. He had 4 assists as well. Sort of the talismanic leader of that team. I think he turns 34 in the fall or next spring or something like that. So, you know, certainly not a young player, but seems like, you know, he's someone I'm just personally rooting for. I mentioned before, but he has some, it's kind of a tragic backstory to his history. So I encourage people to go and read a little more about him. It's a pretty inspiring story. So rooting for Billy Sharp, considering having him in my squad, possibly as early as game week one, I really like him at a 6 million price point. It would be a bit of a punt, but I think that's true of any cheapish player. Anyone from 6 million or cheaper is kind of a punt, you know, like it's sort of, you're sort of flipping a coin a little bit, and he just seems like possibly a fun option. I mean, they play Bournemouth, Crystal Palace, and Leicester in their first three. And then they play Southampton in game week 5. So, you know, I'd say 4 out of the first 5 matches are pretty good from at least an attacking perspective. So, I consider, you know, possibly looking at Billy Sharp. It's only 6 million. The only midfield I'd really consider is Mark Duffy. He had 6 goals and 6 assists. Last season, he does play in the number 10 role for the squad, but he does turn 34 in the fall. So,
another 34-year-old. This is like an old folks' home.
it's kind of an older team, isn't it? Yeah, and he's available for $5.5 million, so the price is good. You do have Oliver Norwood as well, who we actually talked about on our price prediction podcast. Norwood had 3 goals and 8 assists last season. He's available for only $5 million, so I'm actually half it. In my current draft team, I actually have Oliver Norwood in my team at $5 million. So, again, just for me, it's like, do I want Oliver Norwood at $5 million? He's on set pieces too. Do I want Norwood at $5 million, or do I want someone like Jorginho? And I'm just, to me, give me the Norwood.
I was just thinking the same thing. This is what FPL does to us. Now we're having arguments about who to choose between Oliver Norwood and Jorginho. It's really next level thinking, Josh. I agree.
Yeah, it's true. It makes you think you're like, mm-hmm. man, I have like a lot of novels I haven't read, but yeah, I'm gonna go to the stat table and look at this for the next 30 minutes.
But yeah, not to dredge up the whole Jorginho thing again, but I think it does bear repeating that Jorginho, the only set piece that he could even conceive, like we don't know for sure if he's nailed on penalty taker for Chelsea or if he's nailed on anything. But if Oliver Norwood is starting, he's on dead ball set pieces in a way that Jorginho just isn't. So something just to watch for in game weeks 1, 2, 3 to see how that all plays out. Well, it's like what you were saying. I agree with what you're saying. Anything below $6 million is a punt, and you just have to accept that. But you also have to be nimble and understand that it will be clarified in the first few game weeks, and then we'll just have to move as quickly as possible onto those assets that look like they're actually going to earn that value at that price point.
Yeah, and don't fall into the risk of wildcarding too late, which is just, and for anyone listening, you know, we are going to be doing our annual 10 tips for FPL success. I think it's like our 5th annual one, which is insane. We're going to be doing that next week. So once we finish this team preview, mm-hmm. the next week's podcast will be our annual 10 tips, which is always a really well-received podcast. Really fun to record too. So we're going upstate this weekend, and we're going to... not to do this, but we're going to see a friend upstate. And but I was like, yeah, we're going to like map this thing out, man. We're going to like do 10 fresh tips. I got like really nerdily excited.
Yeah, we have to take a retreat just to get our tips and gear. All right. So you've introduced the second Duffy into the FPL game with Mark Duffy. Anything else on Sheffield United before we move on?
Nope. Let's move on.
Okay, I feel like I drew the short straw, and apologies to any true Southampton fans out there, but I just haven't been able to really wrap my head around Southampton the last few seasons, particularly when it comes to FPL. Things were helped when Mark Hughes left and Hasenhüttl came in. Say what you will about this Southampton squad. Hasenhüttl was able to pretty quickly whip them into shape and get them to safety. Safety, weirdly, was just 39 points. I think, like, historically, 40 points is the threshold. But the bottom three were just so bad last season that 39 easily got Southampton into 16th place. So a lot of this is on the back of Hasenhüttl and how he can keep Southampton in check and keep keep evolving this hodgepodge of a squad such as it is right now. The fixtures to start out are, there are some rocky ones in game week 2. They host Liverpool, then it's Manchester United, if you're scared of them or not, in game week 4. Otherwise, it's really quite a good run for them. Burnley and Brighton in game weeks 1 and 3, then Sheffield United and Bournemouth after that, flagging Spurs and Chelsea in game weeks 7 and 8. So they do have some tricky fixtures later on when we're thinking about wildcarding. So Southampton maybe is a team you could consider working with in the opening game weeks pre-early wild card.
Yeah, I just wish their easier fixtures weren't all on the road, you know, Brighton and Sheffield. It kind of feels like that's like every team they play of those three are going to be looking at that as this is their chance to pick up points, you know? Right. And I kind of worry that Southampton are going to be the kind of team that are going to be in like 0 points after their first 5 matches, you know, because they're just going to lose all 5 of these. Like there's no way they're going to beat Liverpool at home. I suppose they could be Man United at home, although I don't expect it. And I would kind of expect them to lose. Maybe they win the Brighton match, you know. But other than that, I see a lot of a lot of losses, you know? So, yeah. I don't know. It just, the team doesn't seem significantly improved. I mean, I guess, I don't want to step in your toes here. So what's going on?
Well, yeah, the new improvement, the big excitement is in the midfield. New signing Musa Gineppo. We're going to need the announcers to come in and tell us exactly how to pronounce that name correctly. But he's a 21-year-old Mali international, already knocked out of the African Cup of Nations. So that's not a concern of anyone's. But he comes to us from the Belgian League, where he scored 8 goals, 2 assists. So it's not like he comes here with some sort of Mbappe-esque high-flying record, but he has potential. And what's exciting about him, and you love watching midfield wide players like this who are fast dribblers, and I feel like Southampton have tried to find a continental fast skillful dribbler in the past. Who was the signing they had brought in last season who they thought they were going to be? Elianusi was the guy they brought in last season who they thought were was going to fill that role, and that didn't quite pan out. So Musa Gineppo at 5.5 could possibly be a player that we're talking about as the season rolls on. Nathan Redmond, FPL perennial talking point, 6.5, quite rich for a one of the leaders in the attack at Southampton, who only came away from last season with 6 goals and 5 assists. Just not terribly impressed with him at the moment. And he really only came on strong later in the season, you know, when the pressure seemed to be coming off of Southampton, Nathan Redmond started to flourish.
Yeah. I mean, I was just going to say Nathan Redmond is the same price as like Yuri Tielemans and 0.5 million cheaper than, you know, James Maddison. It's just like, it seems that the price point seems a little high when you can think about what you can get in that price range.
Yeah, Nathan Redmond, quintessential, only a temptation when there is a bizarre double game week enticing fixture set for Southampton. James Ward-Prowse, I was going to mention, another one where you feel like he might be priced just a little too high at $6 million for what we're going to get, at least to the first half of the season. And I think we talked about this when we were doing our price prediction pod, Josh, about the wondrous fact that JWP had 0 assists last season. When you think of JWP, what do you think about? You think about him
crosses,
taking set piece
deliveries.
Right. Yeah. Corners, I mean, you also think about him taking direct free kicks and scoring goals. He did score 7 goals on the season. So that's not, that's a decent return for a $6 million midfielder. Goals on the season.
They were like all in like a 7-week window. It was like, he scored like, I think it was like 3 in a row, 2 different times. And then one, like, a few weeks after that, that was it. I don't think he had a single goal for the first like 25 weeks of the season.
Yeah. So, and Højlberg, I feel like he kind of emerged as one of these weird defensive type midfielders who broke out of that category last season. He scored 4 goals, had 3 assists, priced at 4.5. That was a very winning strategy for Højlberg. Mm-hmm. But, now he's up priced to 5 million.
Yeah, he had to make him five, like he, but it's too bad.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, depending on how the season goes, I think we might, going back to our discussion about Jorginho and Norwood, maybe that will be a dance that we dance throughout the entire season, is trying to hop from one hot 5 million midfielder to the next. So you never know what will come from Højlberg. The one player I want to watch who I thought looked interesting in streaks last season was Stuart Armstrong, also priced at 5.5, 3 goals, 4 assists. Not a whole lot to say here, but just I feel like he's going to be one that I do watch as the season goes. Before we get to the forwards, Josh, we just glanced over the defense, probably on purpose, right? But I am kind of sad that the one player on Southampton that I was really excited about, one great prospect from last season, was young Valerie. And he came on strong, won that starting position on, I don't remember if he's on the left or the right, but looked like a great player wide coming from the defense. 2 goals, 1 assist. $5 million, it's going to be virtually impossible to bring him into our squad. So that's just kind of a bummer. And then you're talking about the 4.5 goalkeeper rotation, Angus Gunn coming in at 4.5. So that's just one to flag as another starting goalkeeper.
I thought he played well down the stretch last year.
Yeah. The forwards, Josh. Danny Ings signed a permanent deal this summer, so he's at Southampton to stay. $6 million. So that he's the type of player when you're like, man, I wish I could afford Timu Pukki, but I can't. Should I settle for Danny Ings? Would you settle in any situation, Josh, for Danny Ings?
No, I will never, ever have Danny Ings on my team again. Ever. I just won't. Every time he sets on the pitch, he is seconds away from a massive injury. It is just the nature of the game with him. I'm sorry. I don't know what, you know, it's like, I don't know if he Black Cat crossed his path, you know, many years ago, and he's still, that guy is just the most snake bitten player. And I do not like to have injury prone players on my fantasy team. He's a total stay away for me.
Yeah, so a few oddballs in the front line, Charlie Austin and Shane Long. They could be the odd men out in light of the other new signing at Southampton, which is Che Adams, priced at $6 million. Young 22-year-old Englishman coming up from the Championship, Birmingham City, where he scored a really impressive 22 goals last season, also 5 assists. So you would think that Che Adams is being brought in after that great scoring record last season to contend for a starting position, or maybe play two up front, play off of Ings, or see if he can win that number nine spot outright. So interesting player to watch as he develops, Che Adams. So that's it. That's Southampton. Sure. Any questions?
No, I think that can be our shortest one. No, okay. I'm ready to move on. Let's do one more team. Let's take a break. Then let's take a break. Tottenham Hotspur. A sneaky good start, I think. I think they only really have one truly difficult early match. They play Man City away in game week 2. They do play Arsenal away in game week 4, but I think from an attacking perspective, at least, that's not a bad fantasy fixture. Aston Villa at home, game week 1. Newcastle at home, game week 3. Crystal Palace at home, game week 5. Then Leicester, Southampton, Brighton through game week 8. So a really nice start to the season. So that, Brandon, brings the question, why are there no Spurs in my team right now? Mm-hmm. Well, it's pretty tricky. I mean, all you have to do is look at last season's players to see why it's a tricky thing. You have Christian Eriksen, who is in the midst of a three-season points decline. He had 218 points. This is total fantasy points. 218 points in 2017, 199 in 2018, and 161 in 2019. You have Dele Alli, who went from 175 2 years ago to 94 points last season. You have Son, who only had 23 starts last season. You have Harry Kane, who had 17 goals, which is down from 29 goals in the previous two seasons. And he only had 28 starts on the season. You have Lucas Moura, who is kind of interesting, actually. He's the one I'll sort of, he's the one I'm going to spare right now from criticism. But it's, you have sort of the core four of this team, and it's really hard to accurately assess any of them. And, you know, I know that they've all had some injuries, and obviously Son had international duty as well. But, I mean, injuries are a telling indicator sometimes of decline, you know? I mean, it can sometimes be that you are just getting older and you are going to get injured more and more often, you know? And I just worry with some of these players about,
it's like time getting older. You're getting older. Spurs are like landslide is what I'm hearing.
Well, the whole team is a miracle. I mean, it's like everyone had a worse year than they did the season before. And somehow they finished third in the Premier League and made it the Champions League final. I mean, Pochettino must be one of the five best managers in the world. I mean, he's such an extraordinary manager. And obviously, like, the defense came through. There's great team spirit there. And they also did it while moving into their new stadium. I mean, I'm not a Tottenham Spurs supporter, but I admire the club. Like, I admire what they've done the last couple of seasons. And so the question is, you know, who's going to bounce back? I don't know. And until I know, it's hard to take a punt on any of these players because Erickson is still priced at $9 million. Kane is still priced at $11 million. Son is at 9.5. Ellie is at 8.5, which is way too high. Lucas is 7.5, which I actually think is a pretty fair price. And actually, Kane at $11 million is fair. The question with Kane is just, you know, at $11 million, that's a huge outlay for a forward. And I had Kane in my draft squad. He has subsequently been dropped from my draft squad. Because okay. I've just decided that he is at $11 million. I need a player that I'm going to be consistently captaining, and I don't know that I see him as a consistent captain. I don't know that I trust him enough, and I also feel like I have other options. And so, If I have other options for captains, then maybe it's worth going down $2 or $3 million and turning him into Jamie Vardy or Callum Wilson and spreading that extra $3 million around the rest of my team, making the whole team better, you know? And so like the, is Harry Kane essential question is a big one. And you know, I don't know. I mean, I really want to have him in my squad, but my squad is so much weaker with him in it, you know? So right now he's not. How about you?
Yeah. I think the interesting thing to note here is the signing of Ndombele, who comes from Lyon, and he's like a powerhouse in the midfield, a tackler and distributor from the midfield. And to watch an Ndombele YouTube sizzle reel is truly a thing of beauty. I found it absolutely awe-inspiring. Like his level of tackling prowess, his level of close control and maneuvering around opposition in the midfield was pretty stunning. Now, obviously, they put like the 10 best plays that a single player has ever had in these videos. But if you're talking about the Spurs midfield and Harry Kane sort of getting on in the whole journey of the current iteration of Spurs, are they growing older, just growing weaker or degrading as a squad? Can a player like Ndombele free up players like Erickson and Ali to express themselves a little bit more, focus a little bit more on the attack? When Spurs were at their absolute peak, I think was that season when Leicester won the league and Spurs made a legitimate title challenge and Victor Wanyama was in the midfield, absolutely destroying everyone. And they have missed that. And Sissoko has not been able to replicate any type of possession or tackling prowess at all. It's not exactly his job, but Ndombele could be an interesting factor. Obviously, we don't know until we see them play together, but it really could be a game changer for them.
Interesting. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, you know, he's not a full on defensive midfielder either. You know, he's box to box. And so, you know, maybe it's a Yaya Toure type thing. I don't know. I mean, he's available for only $6 million. So the price is, even just like as a fantasy asset in his own right, you know, I think he's possibly interesting. You know, it's doesn't set you out too much. I mentioned a moment ago, but just again, I think that Lucas Moura at $7.5 million, I think it's a very fair price for somebody who scored 10 goals, 2 assists last season, plays on a team that's going to score goals. You know, it's, do you want to fall into that trap of having the fourth or fifth best attacking asset at a team? You know, it's usually something you want to avoid, but I think in this case, especially when you factor in that Son isn't starting the first two game weeks because he's still recovering from the he's suspended, he is waiting for his red card to be over, he can't play. So you know, Lucas Moura is an almost certainty to start the first two matches. I think it's interesting. I wonder if maybe I don't have a spur for the first two game weeks and I just sort of hope I survive that Aston Villa game without one. And then I bring someone in by game week 3, let's say, you know, once I've had a chance to assess things a little bit. So, you know, I think we kind of know the story with the midfield, and obviously we know about Kane as well. What about the defense? Not a lot to say right now. I mean, you have Rose Davis and Trippier and Walker Peters, you know, consistent rotation there. I would avoid all four of those players. Toby and Jan are, you know, sort of decent and unexciting options at $5.5 million. And I think Juan Foyth, who really earned his spot the second half of last season, played quite well. Also suspended for the first two game weeks of the season, unfortunately, is really kind of like, it kind of screws him up as a fantasy asset. So he is at least worth watching though, at $5 billion, assuming that he holds.
Did you see the highlight of Juan Foyth absolutely destroying Philippe Coutinho on the dribble in the Copa America?
Yeah, I did. I had to look it up because I had to look up his number. And I was like, wait, who? Because I couldn't quite tell. And I was like, wow, it's one Foyth. Yeah, so that was awesome. All right. So Kane, I mean, do we need to say anything more right now? We don't really know, well, right? We need to I want to see him play many, many matches before I decide how I feel about him.
Kane's in my draft right now. And, you know, I don't want to put too much money down on this myth of Ndombele, but the particular knock on Kane last season, beyond his many just knocks, his injuries, was the fact that he was dropping so deep to collect the ball. And right. if there is some player or some system change that's able to happen to allow Kane to be able to push farther up the field and be able to receive mm-hmm. the ball in more dangerous positions, then I think that's just so much upside for him as an FPL asset. Because what we really need from Kane is him shooting more, getting more opportunities right. in the box. That's what I'm going to be looking for. And I'm having trouble with my draft keeping Kane, but right now I'm focusing on ways to make it work. I think it would be fun to start with Kane and possibly even captain him at home to Villa in game week one. That's where I'm at.
It would be fun. That's for sure. Yeah. All right. Well, let's take a quick break, and we have three more teams to go. Our three final teams. Brandon, we must stop everything and take a moment to talk about our friends at Fantasy Football Hub. They can be found at fantasyfootballhub.co.uk. Brandon, it's a one-stop shop for all of your FPL and Sky Fantasy needs. Now, we can't play Sky Fantasy here in the United States. It's a little bit of a loss for us, I suppose, but probably like for our own mental health, it's good not to have the Sky game, right?
Yeah, I think it's good. I'm glad those tariffs are in place.
But if you are looking for Sky Fantasy advice, the Fantasy Football Hub is one of the places you can absolutely go and find a ton of super useful advice on there. So I definitely recommend going there if you're a Sky player. If you're just a regular fantasy player, it's a fantastic resource. What they've done is cobbled together the best, most interesting, best thinking, best performing players in fantasy, and they get them to write articles, do video posts, do blog posts, do which I guess is the kind of the same thing as an article. There are podcasts on there. Our podcast is on there. All kinds of great content. Will Thomas created it. A number of fantastic finishes in his own right. Matthew Jones is the World Hall of Fame number one, depending on what. It's like 9 Hall of Fame metrics now, but he's certainly one of the best managers out there. Adam Hofkraft, Ben Crowland, tons of others. It's a great resource. Brandon, tell them what you get if you become a member of Fantasy Football Hub.
Yes, become a member today and gain access immediately to a ton of great members-only features. Those features, Josh, they include, let me tell you some of them. A new Opta Data tool, an advanced fixture ticker, comparison tools, hands-on tools, that will make your FPL team that much better. You get video and text guides, including how to win at FPL, the ultimate preseason guide from the Hub. Also, Ben Crellin, you know his spreadsheets, you love them. You've got an exclusive planning sheet right there at the Hub. Over 100 member articles, and also entry into the big one. It's the big cash prize, the Fantasy Football Hub's £5,000 cash prize mini league. And there is an exclusive 10% off deal for listeners of the Always Cheating podcast. To get your membership discount today, visit fantasyfootballhub.co.uk/always and use the code ALWAYS to get 10% off your Fantasy Football Hub membership today.
That's beautiful. Brent, I heard your voice crack a little bit at the beginning there. I can tell you get emotional when it comes to saving our listeners money. And gosh,
it's important to me
too. It's important to both of us. All right, Brandon, let's take a quick break and we'll get back into our team previews.
All right, we're back and we have three more teams and then we're done with our team by team preview. I can't believe we've already made it. It feels like the season is already over, Josh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But here we are. We are into the W's, and we'll cover Watford here. And Watford is honestly one of my favorite stories from last season. I feel like since coming up from the Championship a handful of seasons ago, Watford finally got it to really work in the Premier League last season. Finished in 11th place. They had a really strong start to the season. I think part of that was them actually finding a manager that everyone liked and wanted to actually wanted to stick around and
for a second Javi
Gracia. Yeah. So Gracia took Watford to the FA Cup final where they lost to City. But, you know, it's just not it was just a great season for them taken in its totality. So what do we know of Watford now heading into game week one of the 2019-20 season? Well, they haven't done a ton of business just yet. The one piece of business they have done is Craig Dawson. You remember him from West Brom. Did you ever bring Craig Dawson into your FPL side,
Josh? Sure. I was more of a McCauley man, but I would have Dawson occasionally.
Oh, yeah. McCauley scoring one of the most legendary FPL ghost goals of all time. But so Craig Dawson was sometimes the forgotten man. I don't understand why, though, because this is a fun fact. Craig Dawson, since he became a permanent fixture in West Brom's starting lineup, he has scored at least two goals every season since. So that's four straight seasons in the Premier League. Dawson scored at least two goals. And even last season in the championship for West Brom, he scored two goals again, also three assists. So if we can guarantee anything in FPL this season, it's that Mr. Dawson will be priced at 5 million and he will score two goals.
It's not bad.
Take that for what it's worth, because honestly, Watford defenders are often like a hilariously bad time. Mm-hmm. I have never brought in a Watford defender and it's worked for me.
No.
Alabas is kind of a good example of this, right? Like you see him do wondrous things 1 week, you bring him in and he's, you know, just a yellow card machine.
Oh, totally. And you pull up Watford on like your fantasy transfer page or whatever, and like their list of defenders always runs like 17 deep, and like all of them have played in like the last three game weeks somehow. And you're like, how in the world do I pick which one to have here? You know, and like Holobas is the one you want, but then that guy's like 35 now and gets so many yellow cards. He's just a massive liability in your team. It's tricky. I think Craig Cathcart is a name that I've sort of heard kicked around a little bit as a maybe more stable defensive option. He's cheaper too. He's only 4.5 million.
Yeah, exactly. And I would recommend exactly that with Watford defense. If you want a piece of that, look for one of the 4.5 defenders. Cathcart, three goals last season. So that's not bad, particularly for a 4.5 starter in a team that could be pushing for top of the table. And Kiko Firmino, one goal, one assist last season. He's kind of in that category of will he play, won't he? Him and Daryl Yanmat also at 4 or 5.
Yep.
And Ben Foster, sadly, probably priced out of the game at 5 million. So let's just move on to the midfield for Watford, which there are just a handful of delightful misfits here. Like all great players in their own way, but how can you justify any of these crazy guys? Like Perea started so well last season.
I know. I thought it was finally going to happen. It happened to a degree, you know. I mean, like he had his moments, but yeah, it didn't happen like in italics.
Yeah, he just kind of disappeared toward the end of the season, finished just on 6 goals, 4 assists. It looked like he was on course for at least 10 goals the way he started that season. Decore, he's like a secret fave of mine, even though he is in that weird sort of Yaya Toure position of where is he actually meant to be playing on the pitch. But he does get pretty far forward, and he did score 7 goals and had 5 assists last season at 6 million. Who knows if he will come into our thinking at any point. I just want to basically take this moment on my own podcast to say how much I really like Decore. But yeah, just like a cast of total weirdos and oddballs. Will Hughes among them is another one of those will they, won't they players.
Sure. I don't know why he's 5.5 million. Like, I don't know. He's not earned that price.
That's that Hughes bump. And he's always going to get it because he's Hughes. The one interesting player in the midfield here, Nathaniel Chalaba at 4.5, definitely monitoring him. When he moved from Chelsea to Watford, you thought maybe he would grow into a starting 11 position, but he had like a season-ending injury that very season, and he just hasn't been able to really work his way back into the starting lineup. But it seems like he's capable of it. So You know, for all you Chalaba heads out there, keep watch. I think what we really need to talk about seriously, though, here now, Josh, let's get real. It's the forward lineup for Watford. You know, Troy Deeney, he's been around for ages, the penalty taker, the captain. But Gerard Deulofeu was the breakout star, particularly in the second half of the season. And he has been reclassified from midfield to forward, price competitively, price to buy at 6.5. Currently already in 14% of FPL teams. So people are backing Jerry D to do something. And they have a great opening game week one fixture at home Brighton. Then it's Everton, home West Ham, Newcastle. Then it gets kind of dicey with Arsenal and then Man City away in game week six. But I think I would flag Deulofeu as an interesting game week one player for sure.
I have Jerry D in my squad right now, and I think he sticks in there. I mean, it's like a secretly good season. It's probably even better than it looks on paper because he missed a bunch of game weeks at the, you know, a bunch of matches at the start of the season. But I mean, you know, 10 goals, 5 assists, 6.5 million, probably a pretty mortal lark to start in that team as long as he's healthy in a game week. So, you know, he's not 37 years old like Troy Deeney. you know, he's not kind of inconsistent like Andre Gray. I think he's, you know, pretty good spot and good fixture. So, I think he's the one player that intrigues me.
Let me complicate things for you here, Josh. I agree, like Deulofeu, strong second half of the season. Those 10 goals that he scored against only four opponents. And let me name them for you. He scored one goal against Manchester City. Not bad. Like, that's the toughest opposition. That's as tough as it gets by the table, as far as the table is concerned. After that one goal against City, he scored three goals against Huddersfield. He scored four goals against Cardiff. One of those was a hat trick. And he scored two goals against West Ham. So pretty much uniformly weak opposition that Deulofeu is scoring against. So I like flat track bully territory, perhaps.
But I'm fine with that because there's West Ham in game week three. There's a terrible Newcastle team in game week four. There's what Brighton in game week one. I mean, Everton, okay, maybe that's a tricky one. It's not that tricky, though. You know, I mean, three out of four good fixtures is like a pretty solid mix.
But can I sell you on an Andre Gray at 6 million, saving 0.5, only 13 starts last season for Andre Gray, and he scored seven goals and two assists. And he scored against a variety of opposition, unlike Mr. Gerard Deulofeu. I mean, I think it's foolish for me to seriously make the case. Like, all right, nailed in the game week one squad, it's got to be Gray over Deulofeu. I'm not trying to overstate it in that way.
Right.
Little food for thought there, though.
No, you can't sell me on Andre Gray. I have no interest in him. I would never consider him for my team. He's not good enough. He's just not a fantasy player. Like, he might score some goals for Watford, but I mean, he's not like a realistic fantasy option in my opinion.
I'm sensing bias in your voice here, but I feel like I made a pretty compelling case there for Andre Gray.
You did. You made a compelling case. I listened to it and I disagree with it, you know, so I'm allowed to not agree with your opinion. You know, I respect it, but I, in this case, I disagree with it.
All right. So it looks like Deulofeu is the huge favorite for this Watford side. The defense is pretty much a stay away. The midfield is strange.
Yep.
And we roll on. Good luck to the Hornets this season.
That's right. West Ham, kind of a funky team. Hard to even pull notes on them. Like, it's, on the one hand, it's you kind of know, you know, the team. On the other hand, it's a lot of things are changing. I mean, Arnie is out. He finally moved on, which I think is probably good for everybody. I mean, it was just such I hate that kind of player, you know, who's just like every time they have like a run of two good matches, they start to advocate to like move to a bigger club or make more money or whatever.
There was a perfectly titled headline in the FPL Reddit thread that somebody had drafted that said Arnautovic finally fulfills lifelong career ambition of playing in China.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it's just like, whatever. Like, great. Like, I mean, if you want to make as much money as possible, that is completely reasonable, and I won't fault you, but it was just like the whole thing was kind of ugly. And why did he sign another deal? Like, why didn't he just force the move in January? It's all very strange. So West Ham is going to look different for sure. They're going to look different up front. They have the big signing right now for them is Pablo Fornals, who is a highly rated 23-year-old attacking midfielder who's joining from Villarreal. His, you know, attacking his sort of, I guess you call his fantasy stats are not super overwhelming. He had 5 goals and 6 assists and 50 appearances last year for the club, which is perhaps not reflective of how he's going to play within West Ham, you know. It was a high price move. There's a lot of optimism about him. Comes in at 6.5 million. So again, kind of at that price where it's hard to just thrust him right into your team because you want to give it a few weeks and sort of just see what you're getting with him. You know, but I think he's very intriguing. Sort of tied with him, he's not a new signing, but it feels like one, is not to sound like Arsene Wenger, Yarmolenko, who is 6 million and back in training. He's just 1 year removed from scoring 10 goals and 9 assists and 36 appearances for Dortmund and Dynamo Kiev. So really tons of players started to look really good, I thought, at times last fall for West Ham. And then did he break his leg? Is that what it was? He had some
both of them.
Did he break both of his legs?
Wow. It was a tragic motorcycle accident. I don't know. I don't remember what happened to him. Yeah, he hurt himself real bad, though.
He broke his leg, I believe. But I can't remember what all the details were. I don't know if it was on the pitch or off. But as of this week, he's back in training. So I think that's really encouraging. And 6 million is kind of interesting. I mean, their run of fixtures is not bad. It's sort of, it looks bad because you see that big Man City to start things off. But mm-hmm. once you get past that, it's a really nice run of Brighton, Watford, Norwich, and Aston Villa in game weeks 2-5. And, I would love to see a more solid defense from this team because there are a lot of really cheap defensive assets that I would love to invest in as like a fourth or fifth defender. As it is right now, you've got this kind of mix of Jop, Balbuena, Ogbonna, else do you want to throw in there? Aaron Cresswell. Cresswell is 5 million. If he was 4.5, he might be kind of intriguing, but as it is, I think the defense just proved to be a real stay away at the end of last season. And
I tried really hard to make Balbuena a thing last season, and it was a disaster of a transfer for me. And I think I tuned into a Copa America match earlier this summer, right as Balbuena was receiving a red card for a goal denial chance. So it was just Balbuena doing Balbuena things. I do not like this.
Sad
defense.
To say. So you have this. So, you know, we don't. So the forward line is, kind of still up in the air a little bit. So the midfield, I actually talked about this way at the top of the podcast, but the midfield is a little bit muddled. You've got players like Antonio, who had 6 goals and 8 assists last season. It was a double. He doubled his goal tally and quadrupled his assist tally from the previous season. So pretty significant for players 29 years old. I mean, it did feel like he really stepped up at the end of last season. Felipe Anderson had a better fantasy season than we probably credit him for. Mm-hmm. He had 9 goals, 6 assists, 18 bonus points. Came in at 7 million, which does seem a little bit high. I'm not sure.
Blech,
like how is Zaha 7 and Anderson is 7 too? Like, you know, one player had 5 goals and 4 more assists or whatever. So, yeah, just kind of strange that Anderson's coming in at 7 million. I feel like if he was 6.5 or 6, he might be a little more intriguing. He is kind of like, he doesn't shoot a lot, you know? He's not really like a... I'm actually surprised he has as many goals as he has, because when you watch him play, it feels like he's really he's got a lot of pace, but then he sort of mm-hmm. plays it off, you know, for somebody to then go in and finish it or, you know, pass it along to the forward. So, So he's a talented player. I actually like watching Felipe Anderson play a lot just as a regular Premier League player, but as a fantasy player, he is a slightly frustrating player, I think, to own. One player that I am sort of interested in this team is Mark Noble, a player that I've really never had any time for ever. He's fairly priced at $5 million. He's coming off a 5-goal, 5-assist campaign. He's certainly a lock to be on penalties now that Arnie has left for China. They have a really nice run of fixtures, and I'm not sure that I trust a lot of the 5 million options that are available out there. And, you know, so you could kind of use him as a, like an interchangeable, like if you're doing like four in the back and you're doing three forwards, then maybe you want to rotate that third and fourth midfielder spot a little bit, right? So if you're going to go 4-3-3. So in that case, you could use Mark Noble as a, I think, an alternating, you know, third midfielder, possibly a fourth midfielder. So, you know, I don't know. I mean, like Mark Noble at home to Norwich or away to Aston Villa in game week 4 and 5, like I would happily start him for those matches, and I would expect an attack and return from him in one of those two probably.
Okay. I won't completely scoff at that. I have had good times with Mark Noble a handful of seasons ago. Yeah. That having penalties in his back pocket is a pretty exciting thing for Noble.
Yeah. So, and he's the club captain, so you'd expect him to start the vast majority of the matches still too. I mean, he's not a young player, you know, he's like almost as old as some of those Sheffield United players, you know? So
I actually just looked him up. He's 32. You'd think he was actually, upward of 34, 35, given how
he looks like, old.
He kind of looks old. I'm not going to say he acts old, but maybe it's just because he's a good team captain and a decent leader, even though he's got like 50 red card challenges in him every season. But
he does look like he's like the dad of one of the players in the pitch.
Yeah,
yeah, for sure.
Right.
All right. So that's West Ham for you. It's a kind of a mixed bag. I do think that there's some fantasy potential here. There's just no one that in talking about them, want to like tell somebody to run out and grab. You know, there's no one that I'm just... It's like it is like Mark Noble's kind of the one that I'm like, hey, like maybe consider it, you know. But I think even like, you know, someone like Antonio is fun, you know, and sort of intriguing. But at $7 million, I just think there's other places I'd rather pick up a $7 million player.
My ears perked up when you were talking about Yarmolenko. He's going to be on my watch list. So
okay.
let's see how healthy he actually ends up being. That's great. Shall we talk about Wolverhampton now, our final team?
Let's do it.
Okay, Wolves, they are in the Europa League, of course, we know, because they had such an amazing season. Their first season back in the Premier League after promotion, they looked fantastic. We made some great friends on Wolverhampton. Matt Doherty, we learned to say his name and then not say his name correctly again, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. Raul Jimenez, one of the best value players next to Ryan Fraser in the entire game last season. Fantastic team, but they took a bullet to the head FPL-wise when they qualified for the Europa League. And then you're also looking at this opening run of fixtures, which...
I think it's actually a triple whammy, Brandon, because it's the Europa League, it's the opening run of fixtures, and then it's the fact that everyone got a massive price bump as well.
Yeah. That's exactly right. And Doherty up to $6 million. After a great season, 4 goals, 7 assists, and just 8 clean sheets. Just focusing on the Wolves defense, that was the huge point of frustration here, is that they played very good defense throughout the season, but they just always had one lapse in concentration per game that cost us a lot of FPL clean sheets, which was pretty frustrating. It's just like, I mentioned this earlier, but to remember that he started at 4.5 last season. So I think what I take that to mean is not that we need anything to do with Doherty this season at $6 million, but there is hope for us, Josh. There is an undiscovered 4.5 million defender somewhere out there, and he's just waiting to be discovered.
I can't wait until
we find him.
Yep. Yeah, agreed. Exactly. Yep.
So Doherty on 4 goals. Who else in that defense had 4 goals last season, Josh? Any guesses?
Yeah, I'm going to guess Willie Bully.
Yeah, you have our running order right in front of you. Yeah, Willie Bully, no one ever talked about this guy, but my man, 4 goals last season. You couldn't see that coming. But I just can't see the risk of Bali being worth it at $5 million. Mm-hmm. Johnny was kind of the other star fullback, again, priced out of the game, now at 5.5, particularly if you're looking at somebody like Chilwell, who this is part of the appeal of Everton and Leicester, right, as we're planning for the start of the season, is they're unencumbered. They don't have to deal with this weird Europa League qualification process. They will just be focused on the league when they hit the pitch. And that draws me away from Wolves and straight to teams like Leicester and Everton.
Totally.
The one player I think that is value for money and might be able to skirt all these red flags that we're seeing is Dendonker, who made a permanent move from Anderlecht. He was just a lone player last season, ended up with 2 goals on 17 starts. He's a 24-year-old player, so he's kind of in the prime of his career. The appealing thing here with Dendonker is the 4.5 million price tag. So that midfield rotation that you were mentioning with Mark Noble, Josh, mm-hmm. Dendonker, assuming he's just locked into the starting lineup, it's just a sensational price tag.
Right. For an assumption I'm not sure you can make, to be honest.
No, you can't. You know, I'm just saying if it comes to pass, and if it doesn't come to pass, and you need a 4.5 bench midfielder, then I think he's ripe for the picking because that's another question that the Europa League raises, because I think sometimes depending on how far Wolves go in the competition, sometimes you see certain players get tapped to be in the Europa squad and then other players are tapped to be in the league squad. So where will Dendonker fit there? So that's just something to keep an eye out. And we might have a better idea because their second round of qualifiers starts July 25th and then another one on August 1st. So Wolves will be playing for real competitive matches more than a week before the season starts. So we'll get a pretty good look at them.
Nice. Be a fun weekend, yeah. Brandon. We'll have that. We'll have our beloved charity shield. Lots of good stuff.
What to watch? I mean, fire up that DVR. I mean, the fact that Diogo Jota was reclassed from midfield to the forward makes it, when I was just sort of looking at Wolves' team, it gave me pause. Like, who actually was a good FPL asset in the Wolverhampton midfield last season? And it was kind of like no one, right? Diogo Jota was the man, and then you're looking at just weird wild punts with Ruben Neves and Moutinho.
It's true. I mean, Neves is a great player and like the coolest looking guy in the Premier League. I love his look. I just think he looks very cool. But yeah, I mean, he just loves to like just hit the ball as hard as he can from, you know, 20 yards outside the box, and it's very frustrating, you know, if you have him in your team. I agree. And then Moutinho is kind of like, he had a real, ultimately a quite fantastic season, really, even given his price. And I'm not sure how high the expectations were for him. Obviously, he's like a, you know, he's been a great player for a long time. But yeah, I mean, those aren't like fantastic fantasy assets. I'm not running out to buy either of them, especially not at 5.5 million.
Yeah, I think if you were forced to pick one, Moutinho on his 8 assists and if he could conceivably improve on that this season, looks like decent value. And if you do a stats comparison, Moutinho comes out well ahead in terms of attacking involvement ahead of Neves. So Moutinho is the player there, but doesn't bear much discussion. Moving on to the forwards, mentioned the reclassification of Diogo Jota, and he's the value pick at 6.5 as compared to Raul Jimenez, who got up-priced to 7.5. Now, you would guess that Jimenez would get an even bigger bump up to something like 8.5, which kind of makes sense when you look at his output last season, 13 goals, 10 assists, and he was consistent regardless of opposition. Just a fantastic player.
Yeah, if you had told me that Matt D was going to come in at 6 million and that Johnny was coming in at 5.5, I definitely would have assumed that Jimenez was going to come in at 8 or 8.5. You know, I mean, 7.5 is downright affordable considering all that.
So you'd think Jimenez would be straight into everyone's team, given that 7.5 seems like a very reasonable price. But for all those reasons that we mentioned, the the schedule, the Europa League, which we saw with Burnley last season, it just drains the squad of, if you're not a really deep squad, it drains you of so much of your power, and you're playing in these far-flung places on Thursday nights and sometimes expected to play early Sunday, and it's tough. So it's going to be...
Yeah. I once heard someone suggest, maybe it was on Grantland or The Ringer or something like that, but like their like way to fix the Europa League was just to make the whole thing like all the Europa League teams, it was just like an NCAA tournament style thing where it was just like, you know, and it was just like a single knockout, like you just played wherever and it was 64 teams or whatever, and then it was 32 and, you know, all the way down. And I guess that probably wouldn't generate like enough matches or something to like replace the revenue. And then it's all about revenue with, you know, that stuff. But it does seem like it's like we're talking about Europa League, like it's like a, like they've contracted cancer or something, like, and it's just like, it shouldn't be that way. You know, it should like playing in Europe should be, and obviously once it will be exciting. It'll be cool. And I'm sure they're looking forward to it, but it's, and maybe it's just the fantasy bias in us, you know, like
it totally is.
Yeah, you're right. 'Cause we're worried about rotation and things like that. But it does seem to have an effect on like just your win loss record in the Premier League too, you know? So I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah. Just a few additional notes on Jimenez, because he is such a star for this team, and watching him in particularly the final against the U.S. in the Copa America, Jimenez had just this fabulous pass to lead to the game-winning goal, and he looked good throughout the summer in the Copa America. He's not lost a step, but interesting stat, if you compare him to a similarly priced forward like Callum Wilson, 8.0, he actually, like, number of attacking returns, not like points, but number of goals or assists totally tallied up. Callum Wilson actually tallied 26 returns versus 23 for Jimenez, so it's just something that you might not immediately think when you look back romantically, fondly on last season, all those good times that you had with Jimenez and all those rotten times when Josh King was scoring when you wanted Callum Wilson to.
Yeah.
That may say more about Callum Wilson than it does about Jimenez, but just interesting to note. And I just, that 7.5 price tag is just so chef's kiss, like, perfect. And I love it. It's like the thing that FPL does so right, where at 7.5, we have to look at Jimenez and he has to perform in order to justify a place in our team. Like if he was 6.5, everyone would have him. If he was 8.5, you might just assume that he will get return. 7.5 is like an earn this price tag, and I really do like it.
Yeah.
The last thing I'll say about Wolves is I saw the most bizarre rumor. Did you catch this Diego Costa thing on Twitter? So there were rumors that he's maybe in negotiations with Everton, but this idea that he agreed to personal terms with, and this could be wildly out of date by the time this podcast goes up, but Costa agreeing to personal terms with Wolverhampton. Like, no way that happened. Is that just crazy?
I mean, it's possible. I mean, they're a really ambitious club, but yeah, it does. I mean, I don't know. I mean, it seems like he's got a big personality and he's aging, and you wonder if that's a great fit for a team that has such a great kind of esprit de corps, you know, but I don't know, like at the same time, like maybe, I mean, a lot of these people are, you know, I mean, obviously he's Spanish, right? Sort of Brazilian and Spanish. He's not from Portugal, but I mean, he probably does. I'm sure he speaks Portuguese, you know, being from Brazil. And so, maybe he would kind of fit in there, you know, like a bunch of other Portuguese speaking people, and they'd feel kind of comfortable and it would work out okay, you know? So, I don't know. That would be my sort of optimistic way of looking at it.
Cool. Anything else you want to talk about with Wolves before we shut this down?
No, I think let's shut it down.
All right, let's sign off. Again, if you like what you hear, if you want to support the cheaters, me and Josh, just go to our Patreon page, patreon.com/alwayscheating. Check out the various tiers there and what you can get in return, including starting at the Lord Sorloth tier, a bonus extra podcast every week once the season begins, t-shirts, head-to-head leagues, the Slack, all sorts of other really cool stuff to become a part of. Producers, you can also become a producer at a Patreon page. And we want to thank all of our producers right now. Josh, say thanks.
I'm ready.
Give thanks.
I will give thanks. Mike DiPietro, Stephen Toomey, Carl Rasmus, Lini Granley, Chris Howell, Martin Savage, Jim Payne, Adam Benjamin, Brian T., Trevor Ingerson, Chris Carter, Da Big Gaffer, Babas Kuhn, Jeff Hoosby, The Broken, Ben Grant, James Holland, Oyvind Anderson, Jazz Binning, Andy Penn, Blair Jacobson, and Danny Evans.
Awesome. And never miss a minute of Always Cheating. Hit that subscribe button wherever you're listening. It's on, whether it's on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Google Play, Acast. And while you're there, give us a 5-star review, write us a review. That always helps us a lot. Also, on social media, Josh, you love this stuff. You're always on there dispensing wonderful wisdom. Mm-hmm. You love it. You eat
I
it
love
up.
It.
Where can people find us there?
If you can go there, you can find us on Twitter. We're at Hail Cheaters, Instagram at Hail Cheaters. And remember we are on Instagram. You know, it's we actually post. We try not to just post the podcast in there. We try to post some actual, like, you know, us out and about at games or anything, something funny that crosses our path. Facebook, you can find us facebook.com/alwayscheating. You can email us hailcheaters@gmail.com. Or you can visit the website to find all of this stuff, including our league code and Patreon information at www.alwayscheating.com.
Brilliant. Another series of team previews in the can.
Yeah. I thought doing it as three parts would not kill me, but it killed me more somehow. I'm double killed. It's better just to, it turns out two murders are better than three, Brandon. So yeah. We'll try to keep this in mind for next year.
Excellent. But we will return with our glorious fourth, maybe fifth edition of our 10 tips for FPL success. Always a favorite episode of ours. So we'll look forward to talking to you guys very soon.
Yeah, we'll see you next week. All right, bye.
Bye.